Hoi, and welcome back to the Dutch and Scots Sportscast. My name is Matthijs, and as usual, I'm joined by Rory.
This week's podcast, we'll be looking at some of the biggest upsets we've seen in football in a long time, some of our favourite football media and stadiums.
And this podcast will be published every 2 weeks.
We'll also have our focused Dutch and Scottish podcast every single Thursday. So firstly, I want to discuss some of the results from over the weekend. There were some big ones. So I'll have a quick rundown of what all the results are, and we'll take a look in at some of the main ones after that. So we had Brighton, who lost 3-2 to Manchester United. Everton beat Crystal Palace away 2-1. Chelsea and West Brom, drew 3-3. Southampton beat Burnley 1-0. Leeds beat Sheffield United 1-0. Tottenham, Newcastle, point each, draw. Leicester City beat Man City 5-2. West Ham beat Wolves 4-0. Aston Villa beat Fulham 3-0. Currently, as we're talking, Liverpool are beating Arsenal 2-1. So the first game we want to highlight in on is the Brighton-Man United game. So the Premier League isn't quite Matthijs' forte. It isn't what he watches generally. It's more Bundesliga or Eredivisie than he watches. So I'm not sure if you know really what happened in this game.
Well, I mean, I had to get the stats open for the game, and I saw that the ending was quite entertaining.
Yeah, so Man U was shocking. Brighton really kind of deserved the win, if I'm honest with you. They hit the bar 5 times, and the woodwork, who knows how many more. They ran Man United riot. Brighton opened the scoring with a penalty, rightfully so, where Neil Mopey chipped it over De Gea, which was interesting. There was then corner, Lewis Dunk scored an own goal, Marcus Rashford scored a very good goal. He had one goal cut off as well, where the ball was put in. He was miles offside, it was another good finish, but his actual goal was actually incredible. Ball was played brilliantly by Fernandes through the middle to an on-running Marcus Rashford running down the left wing. Took the ball with Lewis Dunk on his right-hand side. Cuts in, drops Dunk once, goes to shoot, drops Dunk a second time, then scores in the top corner. It was fantastic. Great goal. Now, 90th plus 4 minutes, Brighton get the equaliser. It's looking like a really good draw for Brighton. Draw with Man United, even though they deserve to win, draw is still something to take. Man United have a last-minute chance cleared off the line, and the full-time whistle goes. Then VAR summons the referee over, who takes a look at the last chance, and it turns out there was a handball, which was the right decision at the time. But then after full-time, Bruno Fernandes has went back and taken the penalty, scored, and they've won 3-2 after the full-time whistle went.
Wow, oh, all right.
Full-time whistle win, they got the penalty after it.
I don't think something like that's ever happened before.
I don't think a professional game sent or not, no. It was the right decision. Basically, the ball was headed, Neil Mopey, his hand was way up above his head in front of it. It was Harry Maguire headed the ball, hit off Mopey's hand. It didn't really stop the shot as much. The header still went on target, but obvious handball. Should definitely have been a penalty. The next main one we want to talk about was that of West Brom Chelsea.
3-0.
West Brom, yeah, 3-0. First half was all West Brom's game. Chelsea, well, I say that. West Brom had 3 shots on target, 3 goals, all in the first half. West Brom were clinical. Chelsea were bad at the back. They they're obviously kind of they're having issues with Kepa Arrizabalaga or something like that. The goalkeeper Kepa, they have issues with him. He's not been very good. He clearly has an attitude issue. That's why I don't like him. They've just signed. We'll maybe talk about it a bit later. Edward Mendy from Rennes. However, he just signed, so he wasn't in the squad. So they played Willy Caballero instead, who decent keeper, decent penalty shot stopper, but he's a bit past it, really. So Willy Caballero was in goal for them.
39-year-old goalkeeper.
Yeah. So he was in goal for them. And after the first goal, which was poor, you could see Kepa on the bench telling someone else how he would have saved it. And it's like, well, if you were saving those shots, you wouldn't be on the bench, would you? Then don't get to him. I don't like him. The second goal from West Brom is a really interesting one. So Thiago Silva was starting his first game as captain. Passes the ball to Kovacic, simple pass. Kovacic passes it back. And it's like you've seen the infamous clip of Steven Gerrard slipping, haven't you? Similar to that, he takes the ball, takes a touch, just kind of loses his footing a bit.
Wasn't the slip against Chelsea as well?
Yeah. It was a slip against Chelsea, but this is Thiago Silva. He's taking a touch, slid a bit. Really, really dodgy defending. In comes Callum Robinson, takes the ball, paces it down the middle, just slips it past Caballero. Not much Caballero could really do for the second one. Half-time comes, and second half's a totally different story. Mason Mount scored an absolute peach from outside the box. Hudson-Odoi scored a very good goal assisted by Havertz. The two of them linked up quite well. Havertz played very well. However, the third goal from Chelsea, which was scored 3 minutes past full, like, as in, like, you know, extra time at the end of the game, is the main one I want to talk about. So that was scored by Tammy Abraham. There was a big kind of scuffle in the box, corners taken, stuff like that, as you would expect. In the last minute, Chelsea are pushing for a goal. West Brom are trying to hold out for the win. After a bunch of shots are taken, the ball lands to Tammy Abraham and he scored. Pretty plain and simple. However, when you watch back, there is at one point where the ball hits off of Havertz's hand. Now, last year's rules would dictate that that would have been cut off because it was in the build-up. However, I believe from what I've seen, it looks like his hand isn't in the most natural of positions. I've seen worse handball decisions given, put it that way.
All right.
So Chelsea, with a stroke of luck, getting, because the handball wasn't given, getting a rescuing a draw against West Brom. I think this is, from watching it, I think this is Chelsea's, the level they were performing at this season, no. They're still without Hakim Ziyech. He's still injured. They're having serious goalkeeping issues. Thiago Silva's first ever game. Marcus Alonso should never have started. I think he'll end up getting dropped. Again, Chilwell injured. So, when Chilwell, Ziyech and Edward Mendy are in the team, I think they all perform better. Stat-wise, they were all over West Brom. And when you watch the game, it was Chelsea's game to take. They weren't clinical enough. The first half, they made three stupid defensive errors. And West Brom capitalised three times.
Clinical.
To Cam Robinson. Yeah, clinical. The third interesting game we wish to discuss,
which is one I can actually talk about as well.
It's probably, I would say, it's the biggest shock of the weekend.
Probably.
Leicester City coming up 5-2 against Manchester City.
Big Jamie.
Big Jamie Vardy, my captain of fantasy football this week, so I was quite happy with that.
Oh, wow, yeah. I had Kevin De Bruyne.
Did you? Oh. I had Youri Tielemans, actually, who scored the last goal, but we'll get him on to that. So I thought it was going to be an easy Man City win with Riyad Mahrez opening the score in 4 minutes, and I thought, easy days, Man City won. That wasn't the case, was it?
It certainly wasn't. I think after the first goal, it was a while where it was up and down, and then it was all Leicester.
Yeah.
Especially after the first goal.
Was it? I think Man City dominated.
After the 1-0?
After 1-0, yeah. I mean, look, Leicester got three penalties.
Mm-hmm.
So Man City sloppy defence.
Which were all sloppy defending errors to give away these penalties.
It was sloppy. We were playing Eric Garcia and Nathan Ake at the back. Nathan Ake, I believe it was his first game for them. So I can put that down to maybe the first game there. Same thing happened to Thiago Silva. We're not going to write off Thiago Silva. We're not going to write off Nathan Ake. They've just signed, according to Fabrizio Romano, Diaz from Benfica in a swap deal with Otamendi. So he'll probably slot right in there. So they should solid up in the back. But three very solid defensive headers there. There was only two goals from Leicester scored in open play. That was Jamie Vardy's second and James Maddison's goal.
What a goal.
Yeah, defensively they were poor, but you see when you look at this, the stats, Matthias. Leicester had seven shots on target and scored five of them. They had 28% of possession. What Leicester did was they counter-attacked very well.
Maybe that's more or less what I've seen.
Yeah, I mean, countering, yeah, they were incredibly. They're always happy.
I think they played their game extremely well.
Yeah, they played their formation. I wouldn't say it was a Leicester City whitewash.
Oh, no, for sure it was.
I don't think there was really a dominant side. I think that Leicester done what they needed to do well. Man City were terrible on defence.
5-2 is a bit of an exaggerated result, but yeah.
Three penalties. You don't give away three penalties and don't expect to come biting them up.
Yeah.
The next main one we want to talk about is West Ham Wolves. Wolverhampton Wanderers are a very good side. They have played some great football up until now. Raul Jimenez, great player. Adama, great player. They just signed now a medal from Barcelona, of course.
That's FC Portugal, slowly.
FC Portugal, but they just got beat 4-0 off of West Ham. West Ham, who, by the way, didn't have their manager. Their manager was at home watching the game via live stream because he has to self-isolate because of COVID. That's David Moyes. But they got absolutely hammered, really. Jared Bowen scored two, Jimenez with an own goal, and Sebastian Haller finishing it off.
Yeah, it's an unexpected result, isn't it? Because everyone is always praising Wolves. And
Not only the praising Wolves, but I tipped West Ham to get relegated.
And I was going to say, and West Ham is like on the other end of the spectrum. Everyone thinks them to do very poorly this year. And I mean, 4-0.
Yeah. But what it kind of goes to show for me is that frankly, every team in the Premier League this year, probably minus Fulham at the minute, are actually full to the brim with quality.
For sure, yeah. I think it'll be a tough one to call at the end of the year. Still,
I think that this blown me away so far. How much fans are affecting it, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's going to be the amount of quality the teams have. I mean, the other team that I kind of wanted to brush on over was Everton, who beat Crystal Palace 2-1. But yeah, their football's brilliant at the minute, and you know the amount of chance creations. Have you seen like James Rodriguez has the most chance creation in the league, but the least sprints.
Oh, yeah, I was just checking. They're still unbeaten. Yeah. Three games played, three wins.
Yeah. Them and Leicester are unbeaten currently, based on the scoreline with Liverpool. They are also unbeaten. And Aston Villa are unbeaten too, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a shock one, but yeah. Another end of the spectrum, we've got Fulham in dead last, who have been poor. I've seen one of my friends tweeting earlier on that he could see them beating the record held by Derby for the least amount of points if they keep up the way they're playing with the quality the other sides have.
And so have Sheffield.
Sheffield have been, it's a shame really, because they played so well last year.
Yeah.
Burnley poor again. I think with Burnley, Sean Dyche really should have jumped ship a bit earlier. They were always going to sink back down. West Brom have played well. They got the draw.
Moved them out of the relegation zone.
Yeah, they've been unlucky, I think. West Brom, they've played nice football. Just defensively, they aren't really sound yet, which is to be expected. Wolves aren't in the best of forms, but the thing is, Wolves are 16th with that squad. That's what's thrown me.
Yeah.
And then you look at like Sheffield United, in terms of quality, Sander Berge. quality player. You've got George Burdock, quality player. You've got lots of very good players there. Burnley, not so much, I'll give you that. West Brom have Mitrovic, who's good. Fulham have Areola and Kenny Tete. Wolves would have been Diaz. You're looking at Southampton, who have Danny Ings. Man U, now you need to talk about Man U and Man City. They occupy 13th and 14th place right now. They're insane. Brighton are. They might not be the best team in terms of quality, even though there are some good players in like the likes of like Trossard, etc. Graham Potter has got them playing some incredible football at the minute. They're playing 3-5-2 formation. They're just going for it. And I think they could easily challenge for a top 10 position this year. West Ham, 11th. Again, West Ham, for all I tipped them to go down. Sebastian Haller was buying them in for Eintracht Frankfurt prior to moving. They've got Felipe Anderson, ex-Lazio player. There's just every single team right now has, especially the kind of top 10, have a lot of quality about them. And I'd really, really, really like to see a proper competition this year. I think there will be. It's the first year in a few years at Man City and Liverpool we properly challenged the top.
And we'll also have some news from the Bundesliga. The games have been played. The second round of the Bundesliga was finished last weekend. Starting off on Friday, the 25th of September, with Hertha BSC Eintracht Frankfurt, which finished in 3-1 to Frankfurt. Then on Saturday, Borussia Mönchengladbach Union Berlin 1-0, Bayer Leverkusen RB Leipzig 1-0, FSV Mainz against Stuttgart 4-1 to Stuttgart. Then in Augsburg, Augsburg Dortmund 2-0 to Augsburg. Newly promoted Arminia Bielefeld beat Erzfc Köln or FC Cologne 1-0 at home, and Schalke 04 in Deutsch lost at home to last year's relegation candidate Werder Bremen. Then TSG Hoffenheim on Sunday beat Bayern Munich, that just won the Super Cup a few days before in Budapest, 4-1. Quite a shock result there. And then Freiburg Wolfsburg 1-1. So I guess we'll straight up zoom in on the most interesting result of the weekend, which was TSG Hoffenheim 4, Bayern München 1.
Yeah.
It's a shock result, and it came
considering
for.
the incident last season with him as well, eh?
Yeah, for sure. It was 0-5 or something, but it was after a lot of supporters of the Bayern supporters were angry with Hoffenheim owner Dietmar Hopp, who
Yep.
is seen in Germany as a controversial figure, because in Germany it is strange for one person to own a club, and it's unheard of, pretty much. And for this man, Dietmar Hopp, an exception was made because he'd been investing in TSG Hoffenheim for over 10 years, and 10 years ago Hoffenheim was a club in the fourth division. So Hoffenheim also is a town with around 2,000 inhabitants or something. It was 1-0 after 16 minutes by Ermin Bisakic, then 2-0 by Minas Dabur, and just before halftime, 36 minute, Joshua Kimmich scored the 2-1. So thinking in halftime, you would guess that Bayern could turn this around. Dutch youngster Joshua Zirkzee had a very good opportunity as a striker for the 2-all just after halftime, but he hit the crossbar after Oliver Baumann, the Hoffenheim captain and goalkeeper, saved it quite well on his line. And then it went from bad to worse for Bayern, with Andrej Kramaric scoring two goals, and the last one being a penalty after some sloppy defending, and Neuer rushed out of his goal and clipped the attacking player. And Andrej Kramaric could score his fourth of the day. Well, just looking at the stats, it was all Bayern. And like Leicester, I think Hoffenheim is also a very quick counter team, and they played exactly how he should play against this Bayern, fast paced, and Bayern had no response, and it's not like they were fielding a bad team. It was kind of crazy result.
I think there's fans in Germany, so you can't even blame it on the fact there's no fans.
Yeah, I mean, it's per, well, they call it Bundesländer, which is the name for a state in Germany, and every state has different rules. So depending on the state, you can see how many people there are. In this specific one, I'm not quite sure, but it was like half-ish.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, the Hoffenheim supporters are not known for their fiery support, but still, there's people. No away supporters.
Bayern were missing some players, like Lewandowski didn't start, and you had Leon Goretzka. Because they chose to start Tolisso and Zirkzee instead.
Yeah.
Personally, I've always been confused. You'll know more about this, being that you follow the German league a bit more. What has led to Bayern Munich not playing Lucas Hernandez and Niklas Süle?
I also think it's a case of Niklas Süle coming back from a tough injury, and Lucas Hernandez having signed only recently.
He signed last season. He hasn't really played much.
I also think it's also the coach is just falling back on what they know. Still, Boateng is still playing, and then Alaba, after Davies' impact, has moved to the center of the defense. And these two players are players with enormous credibility in Germany and high prestige, and it's not two guys that you immediately and easily pass. Also, both of them speak German. Alaba being from Austria, and I mean Boateng being a German international, of course. So there's a few factors that come into play here, but it also could be, I mean, they played a game, what was it, three days before, and then they recently came back from a Champions League campaign as well, which wasn't that long ago. And so, I mean, it must be some kind of fitness and tiredness, which,
again,
in a way makes sense.
Talking about that Champions League game, it's a shame to see Kingsley Coman get benched with his performance in that Champions League final.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
And obviously, it's for Leroy Sané, who's a brand new wonder boy.
First game of the season, 8-0 against Schalke, who is a team we'll come to in a second. But you know, it's crazy how good they are and how well oiled they are. It didn't come out against Hoffenheim though. Let's go to the nearest, opponent, let's say, for Bayern, which is what they're always called every single year, and they always finish either second, third, not first. You know who I'm talking about, Borussia Dortmund.
Yep. I thought you meant geographically. I'm like, are you talking about Augsburg?
No. No, Augsburg is relatively close to Munich.
Yeah, because they used to be their rivals, aren't they? Because they used to be the one team.
Sorry?
They used to be the one team, did they not, Augsburg and, or something like that? They used
no,
to
Nuremberg.
Combined. And Nuremberg, that was it.
Yeah.
I knew that Bayern combined this one a lot
of
years ago.
It's Der Club. That means, like, in German, it's the club.
Yeah.
That's Nuremberg's slogan. Famous club. But not in the Bundesliga this season. So. Mm-hmm. Augsburg, interesting team. It's always like a dark horse in the Bundesliga. No one really talks about them too much, and no one really expects them to perform too well. It's always, for the last 10 years, a team that's performed reasonably well, mid-table, which is what they expect to. Not really in relegation contention, and they sometimes pull off a shock. And I'd say that's what they did here. They beat Borussia Dortmund at home 2-0. Erling Haaland not getting on the score sheet. And from the stats, from what I saw, it's a deserved result. Dortmund didn't really have the best game. Very, very little opportunities. And yeah, deserved result in my opinion for Augsburg. I don't think there's much more to say about this game, except for the fact that Dortmund needs to pick themselves up if they want to challenge Bayern this season. And I think there might be a few other teams that are lurking to do so as well.
Yeah, I mean, both teams. I mean, for one of the goal scorers for Berg was Daniel Caligiuri,
Caligiuri. Yeah, Daniel Caligiuri.
who was a pretty big player for Schalke, who we're going to get on to.
Yeah, he's been around for a long time.
Yeah, I was a bit surprised that they let him go, but getting a score sheet clearly still has it in him. For Dortmund, one of the most notable things is Emre Can, centre back.
Yeah.
Actually, that was a surprise to me. If they were to play one of their CDM centre back, I'd think more Axel Witsel, Thomas Delaney, but they decided to go for Emre Can, which is their choice, I guess.
I mean,
Yeah, but
he's a physical guy. I mean, I can see
I
it.
wouldn't pick centre back though, would you?
No, but I think he can play there. But he's more of a, well, he would be a ball playing defender, but if he were to play there, because he's a very good passer, and I
Yeah.
mean, not a very good tackler, I
No.
guess. But you know, I guess they went for football in the back, but it didn't quite work out the way they wanted to.
Clearly.
Well, then the last result in the Bundesliga, which was not really one of the most anticipated games. Schalke Werder Bremen 1-3, which usually you'd think a Schalke win at home, but last few years, especially Schalke, have underperformed, and especially last year, hardly picking up any points. And coach David Wagner, if you remember him, David Wagner, maybe, I don't know how you pronounce it up there, got sacked 2 games in after last week losing in Munich 8-0 against Bayern.
Yeah, it's a fair sacking.
Yeah, and I mean, how they performed last year, it was a matter of time. I don't know what happened to them, but they've really, really, really crumbled the last few seasons. And it's a massive club.
It looks almost to me that there's a lot of poor ownership. I mean, players like Brelembolo getting sold. He got sold to Mönchengladbach. Caligari getting
Yeah.
sold. Both of them have went straight into and performed well. Doesn't make much sense to me as to why they got rid of them. Loaning out Ralph Farman to Norwich, where he didn't get a game, and then putting him straight back in between the sticks.
Yeah, that was a
I
weird
mean,
move as
and
well.
yeah, Nabil Bentaleb loaning him out and him not doing very much away than just putting him straight back in the squad. Playing Marcuth at centre back, he's a bit of more of a target forward, isn't he?
Marco, this is like a target man, yeah.
Yeah, and he's been putting central attacking midfielder. Sebastian Rudy, probably the best midfielder, played at right back. There's just some pretty blaring issues there that clearly they just need a really good manager to kind of come in and clean up. They just
Yeah.
need better leadership, I feel.
Yeah, he was on the chopping block already, and this was the last straw. I
Yeah.
mean, I'm pretty sure he knew.
I mean, he was rubbish the second season.
Sorry?
Rubbish. He was rubbish with Huddersfield the second season.
Yeah, no, I mean, the first season he kept them in, which was like,
Just by the skin of their teeth they stayed up, and
yeah.
then they got relegated the next season, and one of the worst Premier League performances of all time, and then he gets a job at Schalke.
Yeah, it was an
Yeah.
interesting appointment at the time. I mean, he started off relatively well, I think, at the winter break. They were occupying one of I mean, not the first, but one of the top four spots, and then everything crumbled, and then they hardly picked up any points. I remember the first game after Corona was the derby against Dortmund in Dortmund, and they got thrashed, humiliated. And it's gone down since then. And this season hasn't looked any better so far. But we'll have to wait and see if they can turn it around with a new manager.
One that we're going to highlight a few teams you're interesting parts about them, and the first one we talk about is PSG. PSG coming off the back of a Champions League final loss to Bayern Munich, a 1-0 very unlucky loss. Haven't had the best start to their time in League One this year. They beat Lens 1-0 in the opening game of the season. Scraped that one. Oh, they lost to Lens.
No, they lost.
Why did they beat? They lost to Lens 1-0. Then they lost to Marseille 1-0 in a very eventful game. Then beat Metz 1-0. Beat Nice 3-0. And they've just beat Rennes 2-0 yesterday. What's going on?
Well, first few games. I remember we talked about it a little bit. Corona. A lot of players out due to the virus. And, I mean, that's just very unfortunate, but it made them lose a lot of players in these two games, and they had to field a lot of youngsters. Still, the team that they had to put out wasn't bad, but I think, I mean, it hindered them a lot, of course, but I think they should have won those games still.
Yeah, I mean, the team they put out against Rams, the one included Mbappe, Neymar, and Cardi, who scored 2 goals, Di Maria, Florenzi, their new signing, a right back to replace Thomas Munier. But, I mean, even at that, against Reims, 2-0, both from coming from Icardi, good win, but it's not quite typical PSG style, is it?
No, I think they're still looking for their form. But, I mean, the team they put out was still crazy. And then I just want to mention Mitchell Bakker. The
right back.
Yeah, 20-year-old Dutch player, and I mean, when he went there, everyone here was very surprised, but look at him.
Yeah, I mean, they're both him.
Yeah. But, you know, 5 games in, PSG find themselves 7th place with 9 points, and then you think that's, I mean, quite disappointing, but then you see that Stade Rennes is first with 13 points, so the gap isn't even that big. They lost their first two games of the season, but I can see them occupying top spot within the next month again.
They'll turn it around.
Yeah, 2nd place, Lille, 11 points, and then Montpellier, 10 points, 3rd place, so, you know, they'll turn it around.
The next team we want to talk about is one we've spoken about in previous podcasts, and that is Barcelona.
We mentioned them a lot in the most recent podcast, but that's because so much has happened.
But they've got off to a fantastic start.
4-0.
They just beat Villarreal 4-0. 2 goals from youngster Ansu Fati, a penalty from Lionel Messi, and an own goal from Pau Torres. The lineup was good. I'm imagining, I was wondering what the lineup and stuff would be under Koeman. The notable player not playing would be Ter Stegen. I imagine that was, but
yeah, it was, he wasn't on the bench, so
yeah. So they started with Neto and goal, who's still a good keeper. Jordi Alba left back, Lenglet Piqué centre backs, Roberto right back, as you would expect. Busquets and Frankie De Jong both at CDM. De Jong is a bit controversial CDM, I would kind of, I see more of a fly-out centre mid.
Yeah, he's more of what he played at Ajax, for example, more of a roaming midfielder who goes from collecting the ball in defence to distributing it to the attack, and even attacking when he can sometimes, scoring goals, assisting. Here is more of a controlling midfielder.
Then played Griezmann, Coutinho, and attacking midfield area, which was interesting. Fati getting a start, only 17 or something. And Felipe Coutinho getting a start too, again interesting. And Messi up top, as you'd probably expect. They look good.
Yeah, I'm surprised by this result. Villarreal have also gotten a few good players in, a notable Parejo.
Dani Parejo, Francis Coquelin, and they still have likes of Raul Albiol, Sergio Torres at the back, Moreno and Alcacer up top. They also have Unai Emery as manager.
Mm-hmm.
Win. It's good for Barcelona. I hope they keep it up. I'm sure you do, as a Dutch manager's in charge.
Yeah.
Finally, the last team we want to discuss is Atletico Madrid, and it's mainly for one thing. They had a resounding win against Granada, they won 6-1. But one man got on the score sheet twice, and that is Luis Suarez, and it's kind of weird seeing him in an Atletico Madrid shirt. It feels a bit like an FM thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, it was an interesting transfer because at first it was also rumored that he might want to return to Ajax. A few other clubs were mentioned. I didn't see this one coming. But yeah, it's weird to see him in the Atletico Madrid jersey. But I mean, he couldn't have wished for a better debut.
Of course, I mean, 2 goals. Came off the bench as well.
Yeah, but also still, if you look at this Atletico Madrid team, still a very good side.
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely. They're filled to the brim of talent, especially the talent.
Uh-huh.
And I'll take a look at the lineup here. They started, obviously, Jan, my opinion, best keeper in the world.
Jan Oblak, for sure.
A defence, Renan Lodi, very good young back. Felipe and Savage, centre-back. Kieran Trippier, right-back. Angel Correa on the right is very good. Koke and Saul in centre-mids have been their best players in the last few years. Carrasco, left-mid. Diego Costa and Felix as a striker. Off the bench, they were able to bring on the likes of Thomas Partey, Luis Suarez, Thomas Lamar, Marcus Llorente, Vitolo. They've also got Hermoso sitting there, Hector Herrera.
Yeah.
You know, notably missing from the team was Jimenez, I imagine, through injury. They're just filled to the brim with talent, and they could easily challenge for top three again this year.
I think so too, and it's an amazing squad. It's a mixture of experience and young players, which I think could turn out for them very well this year. In the next little segment, we both want to talk about something interesting and something funny that we saw happening in football in the last period. Unfortunately, Rory couldn't really find anything, but I have something that would cover us both.
I mean, couldn't find anything. I was given about 10 seconds warning to this segment, but we
No, I believe it was a few minutes. But but no, are you a fond follower of the Estonian Premier League?
Yeah, keen follower of it.
Yeah, aren't we all? So that's why I thought I would mention this because everyone would know it. there was a game between, then I have to, I mean, I'm going to do my best. FCI Levadia against Kalju FC on the 20th of September at 2 o'clock, if you're curious, at the Lokok Arena in Tallinn, Estonia's capital, just for all the details. Just regular lineups. I mean, I don't know most of these players, of course, but with number 9 in Kalju's attack, we see a guy named Lauri Suup, S-U-U-P. Youngster, currently on transfer market, there's not really a lot of info about him, only the fact that he's 16 years old and from Tallinn, Estonia. He plays in their B team, and as a lot of leagues in Europe, Estonia's league has some registration rules, which means that in the starting lineup there must be an X amount of players from Estonia below the age of, I'm assuming, 21. Which, I mean, he obviously counts for. But then the genius coach made the choice to, after 10 seconds, so the ball was kicked, goal kick. What do you call it? Like when you start the game?
Kickoff.
Thank you. Kickoff. Ball was played back. Play back again. Goalkeeper smashed it over the line, over the sideline, and a substitution was made. And then Vladislav Komutov, a 22-year-old Ukrainian from Donetsk, came on the field. And This way, they were able to divert the registration rules and play the player that they wanted to play. What's your opinion on that?
Interesting.
Yeah, I thought it would be an interesting thing to mention as well. And they eventually ended up losing the game. So, yeah, it was sad for them.
So now we're going to do our segment of recommendation. I'm going to put it as. We are going to both recommend a bit of football media that we have consumed for if you are interested to consume yourself. And then we're both going to talk about a stadium each that we both like, really, just because we both like stadiums, Matthijs especially. So without further ado, I'll talk about the magazine I've picked. It's another magazine, it's called Diego Mag. I got it a few weeks ago. Got into reading it a few days ago, sat down to read it, and I finished it in the same day because it was that good. I thought it was going to be about Diego Maradona by the name. That's to be expected, I guess. It's not, there's not even an article about him, but the articles in it are still very, very, very good. The likes of stuff they talk about Hungarian football. They talk about the Torino air crash. They talk about many, many really interesting topics. Especially if you like football history, you'll like this magazine. So Diego Mag recommended £5 an issue. There's only one issue, so £5. Well worth a read. Matthijs, what's yours?
My magazine, I chose a magazine. So the magazine I chose is Dutch magazine Santos. And last time,
Ah, I've seen that. I was close to buying that.
which one?
The stadium one.
Yeah, it's they released. I mean, it's a book, 365 stadiums, and it's the most recent one, and it's edition 16 and 17 of the magazine combined. I remember a while ago some news websites published top 40 stadiums of the world, and number one was the National Stadium in Cairo,
Oh.
for some godforsaken reason. So a lot of people got together and they decided to make their own. And I mean, they voted. Capello is included in this list,
That's
which
what I like to hear.
you might be interested in. But no, it's a magnificent magazine they've made. The last one was about stadiums, so edition 16 and 17. And recommendation, it's only 20 euro on their website, which is,
Incredible.
I mean, an incredible price. And then you have the last one, 15, the Eredivisie shirt Bible. Shirt Bible means Bible. So it's the Eredivisie shirts Bible. And I mean, I remember I showed you which was edition 10, the football travel guide, which also included Capello Park. And then the one after was about women's football. And I mean, it's they always pick very interesting editions, and the art style is amazing. We'll link it in a tweet tomorrow, the day after, so everyone can see. But yeah, no, it's a very, very pretty magazine. And recommendation, the stadium book, 20 euro.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Very good recommendation. The stadiums now. The one I'm going to talk about, the home of FC Winterthur, a second division team in Switzerland. And it is Stadion. Here we go. Stadion Schützenweiss, I'm going to say.
That's all right. I think you did well.
Spell Schützenweise. However,
Schützen.
I must say that you has an accent mark above it. But yeah, I like the stadium. I got to finding it because Winterthur happened to be the stadium, the team that I'm picking for next FM's long haul career mode with Mr. Thomas. I like it for multiple reasons. It's old fashioned, which I like in terms of it's two stands. I think it looks really nice, but one of the main things for me about Stadia is I like what's around it as much as what's in it. So at Winterthur Stadium, one side you've got a really, really, really big high-rise flat thing that looks over the ground. It's a bit of a steeple mark of it, and then the other side you've got a big church steeple, which also looks very cool. One of the walls, the non-stand areas behind the goals, has a lot of Winterthur graffiti on it, which is another really cool feature to the stadium. But yeah, just a stadium that I think is very cool, worth checking out for any groundhoppers out there.
Let's go on to mine then. I took a stadium that's very close to heart. Well, it's a bit of an exaggeration, but I've been there. And it's the stadium of Royal Antwerp FC. And it's called het Boschuilstadion, which in Dutch means the Forest Owl Stadium. Why it has that name, I'm not quite sure. But it's a very, very iconic stadium. Of course, both of these stadiums will also be linked in a tweet, so you'll see what we're talking about. But the one of the main stands, the stands that it's the one you see when you watch it on television, or like the one that's faced on the long side of the pitch, is a peach. It's so nice, very, very, very old school. The stadium was opened in 1923, and this is still the original stand from back then. It's the only one left, and unfortunately, it won't have much longer because the stadium is undergoing a complete renovation, and you'll see what it's going to look like. It will turn into a very modern stadium where they're trying to keep the old spirit of the Boschuil intact. But if you want to see the old beautiful stand, you should head over to Antwerp soon, if you can, of course.
Of course, at the moment.
Two of the new stands have already been finished. Honestly, for a new stadium, it looks quite cool, but it's not my favorite. But the old stand, when I was there, I just felt so good and so right to be on that stand. And FC Antwerp is a very historic club. They're called the Old One in Belgium. I think it's the first football club in Belgium, actually. And as of late, recent years, they've done very well. Back in the top flight, qualified for European qualification. Didn't make it, unfortunately. Went out against AZ, so for the Dutch football, it was good. But yeah, a team to keep a close eye on because they'll be heading for the top places in Belgium.
Thank you very much for listening. Hope you enjoyed.
And stay tuned for the podcast about the Netherlands and Scotland later this week.
Until then, goodbye.
Have a good day. Doei.
Bye.